broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Well, We Won't Fly is a grassroots response.
I urge you to speak to the overwhelming number of our membership.
I'm definitely relatable to the audience out there. And
what's great about this drink is that it's cheap. And not only that, it's cheap.
I hate Jews.
You're fired.
It's Phil Hendry show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. It's a news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. And welcome to Through the Looking Glass here every night, Monday through Friday, until 1 and 4, as we go places other talk shows don't know, can't, wouldn't want to do. We do it, man. Coming up Saturday night, beginning at 7 o'clock Pacific time, we start a new live and local show in Los Angeles on KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio, the sister station to our great L.A. flagship KTLK 1150. So Saturday nights will be a special addendum to your video casts. If you're a Backstage Pass member, you can watch an extra video cast. Watch us do our Saturday night show on Saturday night, starting at 7 o'clock, and that is Pacific time, 10 o'clock Eastern time, and we'll make a download of that show available to you as well on Mondays. Tonight we've got a couple of very interesting guests. Mr. Vernon Dozier will be joining us, who's a football coach, and we had a terribly unfortunate incident in Northern California where an ambulance... And we mentioned this last night, an ambulance that was there to get to a young man who'd suffered a concussion on the field was denied access to that field. They would not allow the ambulance to drive out onto the football field. And why was that? Because it was a brand new football surface that they had just paid for, the school district. All right, so that, and then later on, we're going to have Jay Santos of the Citizens Auxiliary Police talking about something that I know everybody's talking about, these new pat-down rules at the airport from the Transportation Security Administration. The FDA has called Four Loko and other similar drinks unsafe. We have that story for you. Sarah Palin says she could beat President Obama in 2012. Plus, the TSA, as we mentioned, continues to defend their pat-down methods. 877-876-PHIL, affiliate spotlight tonight, WQRT, 1160 AM in Cincinnati, and in Tucson, KJLL, 1330 AM in Tucson, Arizona. Two great stations on the Phil Hendry Network, two stations that get it. And if you want to get a live streaming access to our show, you can go to philhendryshow.com. That's philhendryshow.com right now with a Backstage Pass. And you can look at all of our archives as well as our podcasts. It's all over there. 877-876-PHIL. So, yeah, we mentioned this last night, and we'll continue to talk about it this evening. We do have Coach Dozier from Belmar Academy. He's not only a member of their board there, but he's also their varsity high school coach. And, of course, it's a... we're getting down toward the end of the season where there's a lot of playoff games, and I know you had one as well, Vernon, last week, I guess. Was that an away game for you guys, or did you play that at home?
Bill, that was on the road. When I say on the road, it was in Temecula, and we had played Arrowhead. And
The kids at Arrowhead, so they come down the mountain?
Yeah, the Arrowhead kids played down in Temecula. We don't go up to Arrowhead High School because it's a little far, so we try to meet in the middle, and we meet right off the Interstate 10 there in Temecula at the high school. And I think most of the Arrowhead games are played in Temecula, and we've got quite a drive from Glendale, but it's a lot of fun.
And did you win? I'm sorry, I wasn't following.
We did win. Thank you, Phil. We did. So we're now going to our division title. I won the league, and we will go on to our division title, and hopefully we have a Southern Section Championship somewhere in our future.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
We have this story, Coach, from San Jose, California. A high school principal is under fire for refusing to let an ambulance drive onto a football field to help an injured player. And this was a young man by the name of Keanu Gallardo. He's 14 years of age. His mother was outraged, as any parent probably would be. I'm going to play this audio. These are just people, just folks, who were asked by KGO Channel 7 in San Francisco to react to the news that the principal wouldn't allow an ambulance access to a newly remodeled field.
Well, the child's house needs to come first. And that's most important. I mean, and to actually hear this coming from you and coming from the school.
We're playing the audio.
Can I ask you just one thing, please? I'm sorry. I wanted to ask you. I listen to these people. When you play these parents, it's something that I've heard, and I don't think I There's two things I guess I would say. Is one of them is I don't think I need to hear this, and secondly, it is nothing that's very pleasant for me. So if I could, I'd like to put my phone down when you play that.
Well, Coach, it's only a 27 second clip.
Well, for the 27 seconds, I'd like to do that.
All right, whatever you'd like to do, I just want to play it for the audience.
Yeah, for the 27 seconds, I'd like to do that.
Go right ahead, sir. All right, so here it is.
Well, the child's house needs to come first, and that's most important. I mean, and to actually hear this coming from you instead of coming from the school is actually disturbing, too.
It makes me very upset. It makes me kind of concerned about my child's safety.
I think that they don't let any ambulance go on any field at any high school games or at any game, period. I don't think that she did anything wrong. I work in an emergency room. I don't think it delayed his care at all.
Okay, Coach.
Yeah, I'm back. I found that there was no way I could still hear it through the phone. So
let me ask you a question. Why didn't you want to listen to that?
Well, I didn't want to listen to it because I listened to it all week long. I know not those parents, but from other parents, I hear them. They come in. They voice their concerns. It is a daily, if not a hourly, part of my job. They're talking about their kids. They're talking about whether their son's going to play college football. I have more parents, Phil, that come into my office and they want to know whether their son's going to play football at USC or UCLA or Notre Dame or wherever. And I say to them, I have no idea. I can tell you what I think the young man's development is. And sometimes it's a very high level, and sometimes we've had young men leave our school and go on to some great college careers. We've had two or three of them go pro. But I can't sit here and tell you. You know,
I understand. So are you saying that in this case, listening to these parents complaining about the ambulance...
What I'm hearing are people who don't know the reality of high school football. And they certainly don't know what high school football has meant here at Del Mar Academy. I'll give you an example. We had a very similar situation earlier this year because we had put a new polyturf surface on our field. It was not inexpensive. It was very expensive, but we wanted the very best that we could find. And it turned out that we preferred the natural grass. So we took the polyturf up, and we went the additional expense of putting in the best sod field probably in all of high school football in California. I can tell you that right now. We have the best sod field. We have the best drainage. I've got the best people that are working on the field. And we have a great bed. It's very safe.
Now, I just want to be clear. You put a polyturf field in and then pulled it up.
We put the polyturf in. We played two games. And I told them, I won't have my players on that field. I won't go near it. I said, I don't even want my students to come on campus while that thing is still out there. Get it out of here. Get it out of here and get it away from me. Now,
That's an expensive proposition for any high school, let alone yours, even though you are a private school, and I understand that there's money at your school, and that's good. I don't criticize that at all.
We've got some well-heeled families, we do, Phil, but they also demand the very best education for their children.
Of course they do, and I don't blame you for that at all. But to have a polyturf then taken out,
that gets to the story that I'm telling you. I have been the head football coach here for 17 years. In that time, we have won some 12 league championships. We've been to the division title game six times, and we've won it three. We have a resounding record of success in high school football. I say this with the greatest of humility. My name is Vernon Dozier, and people know my name. I'm not an ego case, but they have told me they want to award me by naming the high school field after me when I retire. I'm very, very gratified. And when I say to them, get that polyturf field up and out of my sight and put grass back in, that's what they do. They don't give me no argument. They don't say, well, you know, they just do it. And when a young man has a dislocated shoulder and he may need some pain medication, and the only way to get it to him is to drive an ambulance out onto the field to get him gurneyed up and get that pain medication in him. And that means you're going to begin to rip out pieces of sod every 15 feet as you get to that kid. and in the process destroy a football field, that I'd had them put down specifically because I didn't want no polyturf. We have a problem.
All right, so that did happen.
It did happen, yes. But this was a young man with a dislocated shoulder.
All right, what if the kid had had a concussion?
Well, if the kid had had a concussion, it's the same difference, because here's the thing you don't understand, and I don't think a lot of people, parents understand. My job as a football coach is to make sure these young men are tough enough to play football. And the only way you're tough enough to play football is if you can suffer an injury like a concussion or a dislocated shoulder and walk off that field so that the fans are not alarmed, are not frightened, have confidence, and know you're a warrior. When you get to the sidelines, you can collapse, you can fall onto a gurney, you can do anything you want. But while you are in full view of those fans, you will not crawl around like you're, going to throw up in the gutter, or you're looking for your mama or something like that. I won't have it. I won't have it.
And all right, so Coach, I just want to be clear. You will not allow a football. You will not allow an ambulance on the field.
No, I will not, Phil.
But you won't allow an ambulance on the field because it makes your players look weak and it alarms the fans. But what if the young man desperately needs medical attention?
If a young man is in desperate need,
if he needs the attention of a medical service that only an ambulance can provide, what do you do?
Well, just to be clear, when you have an injured student on the field with broken bones or a concussion or a dislocated shoulder or anything else, you would not let the ambulance drive to him because it's going to rip the field to shreds. It's going to put fear into your fan base.
I understand that, but what if the kid needs immediate medical attention?
What you do then is you train your players, as I've trained my players, you say to them, take it, take it, take it, ride it, ride it. Now, what we do with our...
I don't understand what that means.
What we do, if you let me finish, what we do, Phil, yeah, during the season, if you're injured and you know you're going to get off the field, you've got to ride that. When you get off the field, then there'll be a doctor, an ambulance, an emergency room, whatever you want. But I teach my guys to ride it.
And when you say ride it, that means somehow get off the field in your agony or in your pain.
That is correct, yes, sir.
And then?
Then the ambulance is there to meet you. But if you are crawling around on the field like you are some beaten down dog, see, I wouldn't have my players crawling around laying there like a dog, because that tells the fans, look at him. I can't have confidence in him. I can't have confidence in my team. I can't have confidence in anything. They got to walk off. They got to ride it and ride it and ride it until they get off the field, and then they can collapse into the ambulance or whatever they do. And this is the difference between what I teach my team.
Do you think, not to interrupt you, do you think that's what they were doing in Northern California?
No, I don't think. I don't know what they were doing up there. They were worried about the field. And I worry about the field, but I worry more about my players. And as long as they, I tell them, you've got to ride it, Phil. And
well, what we have here are young people who may be injured, and they may need a doctor. And
I understand they need a doctor.
But telling a kid, you know, to ride it until you get off the field, you may be endangering his life.
No, you're not endangering. Well, let me explain something to you, okay, before you go off into talk radio land. You're not.
What do you mean by talk radio land?
Well, I think there's an awful lot of hyperbole.
No, I'm talking about some, you know, kids have died out on football fields. You know that?
Yes, and so have pros. So have adults. I know all about it, Phil. I played pro ball. I've seen men die. And I've seen men crawl like dogs. I ain't going to have my players crawling around like a dog. They can get off the field fast enough.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. And I know that you think your approach builds character, but you haven't answered my question. What happens if that kid needs a doctor out on that field and he can't make it to the sideline?
I've not met one guy.
All right, hold on for a minute. 877-876-PHIL. We're talking to Vernon Dozier about the allowing ambulances onto a football field. One was denied access onto a high school football field last week because they had just put the field in. In his case, they've denied an ambulance access to the field, not only because they have a new field, but because he does not want it perceived that his players need that kind of assistance. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Coming up next hour, we've got Jay Santos with the new TSA pat-downs.
Phil Hendry.
And he is not only a member of the board there at Belmar Academy and a teacher, an academician, but also is a football coach, the varsity football coach there. We had a situation in Northern California, and maybe it's happened across the country, where an ambulance, which was going to render assistance to a player with a concussion, was not allowed on the field because of the newly installed field. And I don't think I've talked to anybody, Coach, that understands this reasoning other than you.
Yeah, but my reasons are a little bit different, Phil.
Your reasons have nothing to do with the field.
Well, my reasons have to do with the field. They have to do with the amount of money that's spent on a field. You've got a young man with a concussion. I'm very sorry about that. I don't know how to say this, but it's football.
He's a minor, and he could be very, very seriously hurt.
He could very well be very seriously hurt. You're absolutely right. But that ambulance coming out onto a field and ripping entire sections of sod out as it drives out there, destroying not just a football field, but the pride of a school and the pride of a community, many communities. That ambulance tearing, if you will, Phil, the guts out of an entire community, so it gets to a kid who's got a headache.
Brother. Well, we're not talking about a headache here, though. We're talking about a concussion.
We're talking about an in-game condition that millions and millions of football players have suffered down through the years. And if I can teach my players anything, it's this. You're gonna crawl around out there like a dog, or you're gonna get up like a man and walk off that field so I don't have to see my field, your field, the pride of our school, the pride of our community, torn to shreds by an ambulance. Because your mama wanted you to have a nice little ride. And I can tell you this much, Phil, when I talk to my players, and I do, I exaggerate it. You know, when I say to these kids, I'm trying to make them tough. Kids will be able to survive college and even pro ball if they go on to professional football or whatever it is they do with their lives. I'm not going to coddle these young men. And I say it to them just like that. I say, do you want to play football or do you want to go back to the ever-loving arms of your mama? Boy, you ought to see them. That gets their attention.
Well, you're basically calling them sissies.
Well, no, I'm not.
Well, that's what you're saying. You're saying unless you can walk a concussion off, you're calling them sissies. You've seen pro players who have been told that they have to sit it down, man. They've had to end careers because of concussions. Here's Dan in Laredo, Texas. Dan, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show with Vernon Dozier.
Thank you for taking my call.
This is a... Texas is a good high school football country.
Yes, it is.
That if he had a heart attack on that field, would he then not allow the ambulance to come out there and get him? I mean,
I would make my way off that football field, sir, the best way I knew how. I certainly wouldn't crawl around out there like a dog that just got hit by a car. No, sir.
But you're basing your opinion on this, that this young man or yourself is totally conscious. If you're unconscious, and I play football, I know that people get knocked out sometimes. It happens.
Absolutely.
Why would you want to put a piece of ground ahead of somebody's safety?
I'm not doing that, sir. I'm putting the young man ahead of the piece of ground. What I'm doing is I'm giving that young man enough pride to get to his feet, even if he's got to be lifted to his feet by his teammates or by a trainer. And even if I've got to make it look like he's walking off the field, even if his two legs are dragging, I won't have him crawl around out there like a cat that just got run over by a car or a dog.
You know, you've been talking about dogs and cats and everything. This is a human being.
I understand that, Mr. Henry, but I got a bench full of players. I got fans in the stands. I got people who rely on our team, and I don't want that young man thinking that Mama is going to call the shots on a brand spanking new $300,000 football stadium with the field. You see, I don't know, this gentleman here, Dan, is that your name, Dan? How do you like that, $300,000 for a stadium?
I think you're crazy. I really do, that you're trying to put a piece of ground ahead of somebody's safety.
Exactly. That's what my point here is, Vernon. And why can't you see that?
No. You gentlemen can't see that there is nothing that's going to happen to a football player on a football field that he can't at least somehow get up and make an effort to make it look like he's walking off the field. I will not have him crawl off like a drunk, like he's looking for a play. Oh, man.
All right, hold on. 877-876-PHIL. I know that story. With me is Vernon Dozier, high school football coach at Belmar Academy. We are discussing a case last week in Northern California, and maybe this has happened around the country, where a young man had a concussion on a football field, and they would not allow the ambulance on the field because they had just purchased a brand new football field. They had just either put in new sod, or they had otherwise remodeled or refurbished the field, and they did not allow the ambulance out there. And this was something that was quite a controversy, Vernon. You're defending a decision like that. I know you had a newly reseeded field at your school as well, but you also talk about the toughness of the players. Now, you brought up Terry David while we were in the middle of a break, folks. Go ahead and tell people, because I know the case.
Well, you know the Terry David case.
I do.
All right, then if you do know the Terry David case, I don't know why you're arguing with me.
I know what happened to Terry David.
All right, well, hold on for just a moment, Phil, because I think your audience needs to hear this story. Terry played for me at Belmar. I don't think there was any scout at the collegiate level who wasn't aware of Terry David. He was going to be a starting quarterback at the collegiate level, there's no question. And Terry, and this is the kind of kid he was, took the snap on a play, and we were playing Clemson, I'm not sure, but in any event, I remember the colors of the jerseys, I think it was Clemson. And this defensive end came in unblocked, and he grabbed a hold of Terry's face mask, and that young man's neck and his head were spun almost completely around. And it almost took his head off. And I can still remember that young man laying on that field, his head twisted to one side. And he saw the ambulance, and I remember seeing that left hand of his up and with the hand saying, no, coach, I'm walking off. I'm going to tell you something, I could have cried.
That's a brave thing for a young 17-year-old boy, okay?
No. That was a man that did that. That was the day he come into his manhood. And he got up, and I don't know how he did it, because he had blurry vision. He couldn't lift his head off his chest, and he, with the help of about three or four teammates, he would not allow that ambulance onto the field. Well, I was proud of him.
And we know what happened to Terry, don't we?
Mr. Henry, we're not going to bring that up.
You don't want to bring up the fact that the young man died?
You know something? Are you going to die? Yes. Am I going to die? Yes.
No, the young man died because of the dislocated vertebrae. He couldn't breathe. He went to the hospital that night with a broken neck, didn't he?
You want to take a story of inspiration, and what you want to do, Mr. Henry, like so many people like you in the media, you want to lift your leg to it. You want to relieve yourself all over a beautiful thing, like the story of Terry David.
We want to know what the true outcome of a story is, and with that young man, and yes, he was brave, absolutely was. And
he gave hope to a lot of people in the stands that night, to that football team, and people know his name to this day. But you, what you want to do is you want to take Terry David, and you want to lift your leg to all that he is, and relieve yourself all over his legend. And
no, I don't. I want the truth told. What's wrong with that?
I just told you the truth.
You told me part of the truth, yeah. You told me that Terry David got his head twisted around, laid on the field, put his hand up, didn't want the ambulance, came off the field. What you didn't tell us is he went to the hospital that night, eventually developed breathing problems, and died.
You know something? Guess what happened yesterday, Mr. Henry? Did you hear?
What?
People died. Oh, but in your world, let's stop the presses. Somebody died. And
no, it's just the story that you're telling did not have, in my opinion, all of the facts. 877-876-PHIL, world-famous Phil Henry Show. Veronica, go ahead. You're on the Phil Henry Show.
So now we go to a phone call, and I don't get to say what I want to say.
You've said what you want to say, but I want to talk to Veronica now. Go ahead, Veronica.
Well, my point is this. is that what this gentleman is saying is that he thinks that the ambulance shouldn't be allowed onto the sod or the landscaping. But my position is this, is that if it was my son and he was injured, severely injured, that no amount of money is going to take care of the amount of money to cover the litigation. And so, therefore, because the parents are always left to take care of their son if they're injured, whether they're left, you know, crawling like a dog, as he says. So, to me, I think that you should allow the ambulance on to
You made a good point. You made a point, ma'am. You made a good point that I'd like to point. You said, and I agree, I don't want the ambulance staying off of the landscaping. I couldn't agree with you more. But this is not landscaping, ma'am. This is a football field. In other words, this is a work surface. A work surface that is where we do our work, which is called the game of football. If it was just landscaping, somebody's petunias or someone's, you know, you could drive a tractor. I couldn't care less. You could drive a, you know, 16-wheeler over top of that. I wouldn't care. But this is where we work. And Terry David, that night, he might have known he was going to die that night, but he was going to let the fans down.
But grass grows. You can regrow grass.
Terry put his hand up.
Grass grows.
Regrow grass. Ma'am, it takes for a first-class football field to get back into shape. If they put an ambulance on that field and every 5 yards it's ripping sod up, almost as if I was dragging a chain across it, just to get a kid off the field who's going to die anyway. And
oh, man, so now we know the truth.
What, that's where you go
now
left.
We know that, that's where you, now we know the truth. So the kid was going to die anyway. Why waste the time and the field with an ambulance?
Right.
Terry David
that's
gave
where
me
it doesn't
strength.
Make any sense to me is that what you're saying is that even why bother to go and take care of a child that has snapped his neck or has serious back injury? Because you're going to destroy the grass.
Well, no.
That's ridiculous.
Let me ask you this. Let me ask you this. What about this? What if by getting him into that ambulance, you have just seriously depressed the team and the fans because they think this kid hasn't got the guts to walk off that field like a man and instead needs
to ride
off the
field? If he has a back injury, he won't be able to walk.
Exactly.
Well, Terry didn't have a back injury. He had his head twisted around 360.
Yeah, okay. And that, and then guess what?
You know, Phil, you get so excited I can't understand it.
He had a neck injury that dislocated vertebrae.
And everybody in the stands watched that young man walk off. They watched him say, "No, coach, no ambulance for me. No way. No way. I'd rather die right here than get into an ambulance. I don't need my mama." And I'm not saying that to this lady. I know you're a good woman, and I don't know how you raised. If you've ever raised any sons, I'm sure, Veronica, you didn't want your sons crawling to you like
well,
your
Well, actually,
mama.
My
did,
son
did
was
you?
Injured in a football injury while we were out of state, and he dislocated his elbow and went into shock. And they did allow an ambulance. Well, they did allow an ambulance onto
No,
they did. And
you
I was glad
that
they did. Because he went into shock. And he was not able to.
You know why he went into shock? Because he had a mother that every time he got injured, you'd go, "Oh, no." And
that's absolutely wrong.
You don't know what
Well, you know, Veronica, is your son okay now?
Of course he's okay.
Absolutely. And he continues
you know
to
why? He's sure, her son's okay. And her son, you know, forgive me, but your son was out there going, "Mommy." And my guy, Terry David, is a dead man because he wouldn't let that ambulance come after him.
Well,
that's because
that
you trained
great.
Him to think that way.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? We've got a statue to Terry David. And I'm going to tell you something. I insisted that they make this statue true to life. And it's on our campus.
All right, I'm going to let Veronica go before you tell this story. Veronica, thank you very much, and I'm glad your son is better, too. 877-876-PHIL. Let's go over here to Richard. You're on the Phil Henry Show with Vernon Dozier. Go ahead, sir.
Yes,
I would like to tell about the...
We'll tell the story of the statue in a minute. Go ahead, sir.
Yes, I'm like military...
You need to turn that radio down. Turn the radio down.
I'm sorry, sir. Military,
that's right.
Police, like basic medical care and everything for someone, if they just go ahead and support the body, the neck, the head, and everything. They cannot be moved. If you get them up and walk them off the field, or if they try to do it themselves, they are endangering their lives. That poor man could have died that day just because he got up and walked off the field because an ambulance did not come to him.
He did die that day. He died
exactly,
at the hospital.
Exactly, but the reason that he could have died, he could have caused more trauma to himself by getting up and walking away, where he should have been mobilized and not moved until proper medical care got to him. That is basic
exactly.
medical care. When I was in Iraq in infantry with the Marine Corps, if someone had a back or head injury or something like that, we didn't even move them until proper medical care got there. We sustained them, kept them in proper restraint so they could not move one inch. Because it is a life-threatening injury.
Isn't that great? So here's a guy, he can't move, and what's coming up over the hill? A bunch of these towel heads. And this guy, you got him strapped in so tight he can't go for his weapon? No way.
Hey, look, man, this is not a movie. This gentleman's talking about a guy that's injured, waiting for the combat medics to arrive.
And what is that guy supposed to do when he's all tied down like that? And here comes some insurgents.
That bad, he can't defend himself anyhow. That's where it comes down to. Each individual has to look out for anyone, whether it's on a football field, whether it's in a war zone, whether it's walking down the street. If someone's seriously injured, they need proper medical care as quickly as they can get it. And you need to protect.
So what are you
going to
do? You try to save the guy's life. What are you going to do? You're going to keep that guy. You're going to keep that man untreated, just so he can pick up a weapon and do what? Fired up in the air, he can't even point it. He's that hurt.
Well, I don't know, and I'm not trying to second guess this man. He knows his job better than I do, but I know my job better than he knows my job. And I will tell you,
not because that young man. What you're saying is you applauded him for walking off the field. That moment right there could have been the reason that he is no longer
that,
on the field.
Why he died?
Because he was not protected properly.
You want to know what he did do though? He did give hope. And he gave hope to go on another day to me, my teammates, and those people in the stands because he said no to mama.
Any guy. That's unbelievable, man.
Why? What's unbelievable about it? The fact that young man said no. No ambulance for me. No more Jell-O for me, Mom.
That's not hope. I would rather have young man on earth today doing something better than giving someone hope.
And he would inspire more people,
Inspire more people, what, after he crawled off like a dog? Who's he going
to
inspire?
You're trying to tell me he did more by dying that day than what he could have done. This man could have been a cure for cancer or anything else. And you talk about a $300,000 football field to top it off. What about the lawsuit that would ensue that would cost more than $3,000 because you seriously hurt someone in regards to not giving them proper medical care in a not timely manner?
Right. What about the lawsuit? Did the parents sue?
No, they didn't sue. You want to know why? Because they knew, as I knew, as everyone knew, Terry, that's the way he wanted to go out. He said, no, I am not going to take an ambulance. I'm not going to say those words. I'm not going to say the words that have sunk men before me. And you know what the words are? Nah. I ain't saying that. No. And his parents said to me, I'd rather my son die than have him, and then they broke down. So that's when we unveiled the statue. And I would like to tell you.
All right, look, thank you very much, sir, for your call tonight, Richard, and thanks for your service to our country in Iraq. We're going to be back with more from Vernon Dozier.
What about the statue?
We'll hear about the statue when we come back. And about ambulances on football fields. What's more important, the health and safety of our kids or whether the ambulance tears up the football field going across it to get to the kid? 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL, world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Mommy.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL. Back for a final segment with Vernon Dozier, who is a high school football coach at Belmar Academy in Glendale, California. And all over America, it is high school football season. It's a great time. And football is a great game. It's particularly a great game for kids. It's the first team sport some kids play. It's a hell of a team sport, and I don't put down what you do, Coach, and I appreciate what you do. I think we all do. But what we don't want to see is our young people made to grow up too fast, that's all.
I'm not trying to get them to grow up too fast, Phil.
I understand that. But this young boy you're talking about who would rather have walked off the field than have the ambulance treat him, and you're very proud of him, he wound up dying later on. This kid who had the concussion up in Northern California, and they wouldn't let the ambulance onto the field, you defend that because you don't want these kids turned into mama's boys and this kind of thing. You heard what that lady said. Her son went into shock when he dislocated that elbow, which is from the best we can figure out. You probably know what shock is. It keeps the body from bleeding profusely if there is a problem that way.
Well, I'll tell you something about shock, Phil. I've never liked that word, and I'll tell you why I don't like the word shock. And I don't like the word, and I don't like the condition because it sounds... It is an effeminizing term, and what do I mean by that? I don't mean any assault to women. I'm saying, though, that for a young football player, to say to him, oh, you're going into shock, that sounds so, I have to put the term, excuse my language, it sounds so candy ass. I'm going to go into shock. We don't allow that. I won't allow it. I won't allow the word, and I won't allow the condition.
How do you keep somebody from going into shock?
I tell them that you're going to get up and you're going to walk off this field, and by the time you reach the sideline, there'll be someone there to help you, but you aren't going to crawl off. At what point do we teach our young people to crawl? Do we ever tell a kid, okay, crawl home from work? No, we don't. Do we tell a kid to crawl home from school? No, we don't. Do we tell a kid to crawl to the altar when he marries his wife or her husband? No, we don't. Only in football am I told that my kids are supposed to crawl off the field.
Nobody has said that your kids...
Well, that's what you're telling me now.
No, sir, I'm not. No one said your kids crawl off the field.
Yes, you are, because...
But no, we're saying they get put into an ambulance.
All right. Well, then it's the same. Then here's what you're telling me. Either crawl off the field or get pushed off in a baby bassinet, in a baby carriage.
A baby carriage?
There's no difference, is what I'm saying, in the minds of the fans who see the difference between someone that was willing to walk off and someone that's got to be put into a bassinet.
All right, 877-876-PHIL is the number on the Phil Hendry Show. Let's go to another phone call. We have Michael in Houston, Texas. Go ahead, Michael. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Yeah, Vernon, I'm just curious. Why is your view so inconsistent with that of the policies of the NFL and the way that they treat concussions? We just watched Austin Collie come off the field 2 weeks ago on a stretcher. They had him stabilized on the field, taken off on a stretcher. Is that a baby carriage to you?
Well, the NFL's got a lot more money, don't they? And if they take
they have more money, but they're protecting their players.
Have you seen an ambulance on a football field in the National Football League? If you do... It's because they've got enough money to put down a brand spanking new field the next day. They have enough money.
When does money have any sort of value over life? You're talking about them protecting their players.
You're obviously not concerned about protecting your players.
Concussion prevention is the biggest issue in the NFL today. That is the biggest issue that is being driven right now today. And you basically are turning your back to it.
If that was the biggest issue, why don't they have bigger helmets? They keep the same size helmets.
They are creating better helmets in order to try to prevent it, but that doesn't mean that it's an issue that doesn't happen. You're just turning a blind eye to it like a high school football coach.
You're not allowing
bigger than your community.
No, you're saying that you ignored my reasoning. I told you that the NFL can drive tractors onto their fields because they can put a new field down. What if it cost them money to drive a tractor onto that field? Do you think they'd go out there and get that player? The answer to that, no.
Why are you valuing money over life?
The NFL values money over life. NFL values money over life. You know that. I know that. There are guys out playing NFL games tomorrow or whenever, this weekend, and their brains are going to be pouring out of their ears, but they'll have a trainer stick a couple of plugs in there. So you don't see it, and I don't see it, and they get back in and play.
Oh, you don't know that.
Really? Mr. Hendry, you know as well as I do, those guys go back onto the sideline. They get a shot for this and a shot for that. They're numbed up. Boy, they got more dope flying through their system, courtesy of the NFL, than Barney Ross on his best night
So which side right are you on, though? Which side are you on?
I'm on the
now,
side
now
of
you're
toughening
back to
these
the
kids
side
up.
Now. Your point
I'm on the
knowledge.
Side of toughening these kids up. I'm on the side of toughening them up.
You are exactly one of those coaches in these small-town communities where nothing's bigger than the program. Yeah, and you know it. You know it through and through, and that's the reason that you are the way you are. We've seen you. You are a dime a dozen.
Are you a football fan?
Absolutely, I'm a football fan. But I'm also protecting the player.
I can tell you're not. I can tell you don't know anything about football. No, you don't know nothing about it.
Oh, yeah, I don't know anything about it.
You don't know a thing about football. If you don't know that football is about walking off that field and not looking like you got to run home and hug your mama, then you don't know nothing about football.
You are absolutely ridiculous. You little
why?
Program in your little small
program,
town
huh?
mind.
Small town, huh?
Yeah,
California
absolutely.
Football. Hey, let me tell you something. California football kicks hell out of Texas football any day.
Oh, absolutely.
You know that,
That's why everybody comes to Houston. That's right.
No, John Elway from the Valley, Los Angeles. That's got a sting, man.
That's got a sting.
All right, okay.
Yeah. Well, that's why you're crying. You're crying because California turns out football players, and you, what do? You sit there and you worry about whether a guy's brains are coming out of his ears. I'd rather make sure that I got a winning program, day in, day out, not turning out mama.
Phil Hendry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
I get the impression that you're expressing your understanding.
She's working hard. She's the first person in 11 seasons.
No, I just drank it probably a couple times. And
I hunger for quality news. I'm tired of the right
giant douche nozzle.
Fire.
World famous Phil Hendry show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast until they say,
you're fired.
We're here every night for the world news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. That's right, man. Through the looking glass we go and beyond as we go places other talk shows wish they could go, but they can't. And don't forget our website, philhendryshow.com. That's where our live streaming video of the show is happening right now. Right now, live streaming audio of the show. And starting Saturday night, we do an extra sixth day show. We're going to be broadcasting on KFI Los Angeles, a local LA show. But for those of you who are listening to us nationally right now, you can, if you'd like, visit our website. And you can watch that show as well on our video cast and download it as well on Monday. So you're never far from all of the stuff that we got going on here on the world famous Phil Hendry show. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. The head of the TSA has defended the new security measures, and we got Jay Santos of the Citizens Auxiliary Police to join us to discuss this in just a moment. But let me tell you first, and I want to give you just the lowdown, if you will, on this story. The TSA, this is the Transportation Security Administration, the head of this group, has said that these aggressive pat-downs and full-body scans at airports are going to continue. And he told a Senate committee on Wednesday that the screenings are necessary to protect the nation's flyers. Much of these screenings came about as the result of the so-called underwear bomber on Christmas Day of last year. Here is TSA Director John Pistoli. He defends the new security measures at airports to CNN's Anderson Cooper.
The pat-down is designed almost exclusively to resolve some type of alarm, some type of anomaly. It's not punitive in any way. It's designed to ensure that everybody who gets on that flight, just as you do or I do or anybody else, that everybody else on that flight has a high level of confidence that everybody else on there has been properly screened.
Director Pistoli had an exchange with Senator Mike Johnson, though, today, where he refused to alter the TSA security policy.
I get the impression that you're expressing your understanding. I'm thinking nothing's going to change.
Well, so if your question is, do I understand the sensitivities of people? Yes. If you're asking, am I going to change the policies? No. Because I think that is what, being informed by the latest intelligence, the latest efforts by terrorists to kill our people in the air, no, I'm not going to change this policy.
There you go. That's a pretty straight-ahead answer, and people are, you know, they're not enjoying those who are being subjected to the pat-downs. Some of them are not enjoying them. Joining us is Jay Santos of the Citizens Auxiliary Police, which is a... You are a volunteer or an auxiliary police agency. Mr. Santos, you insist that we not talk about your organization in anything less than the strictest of legal terms. Although you don't have arrest powers, you do rely upon the constitutional right to citizen's arrest. Now, you're not with the TSA, but you are, whenever possible, you've already volunteered the help of your group. Is that right?
Well, that is correct, Phil. And we have set up at LAX, to give an example, Phil. We're in the Los Angeles area, but there's also a great many other auxiliary police agencies in the United States right now, particularly out in New York State, the simulated Minutemen of New York, and also the West Coast, or the West Texas Range Riders, where we can set up and do the pat-down if individuals are going to refuse to do the body scan. Now, we have asked TSA if they need our assistance, we are at the ready. But if individuals refuse to go through the screening, we're there. And we'll say to them, look, let's get over here and let's do a pat down. And
well, but you're not officially with the TSA.
No, we're not officially with the TSA, but here's where we're different from the TSA. And this is why we have found that our procedures are much, much better than TSA, and we feel will benefit the people who are traveling. One of the reasons why people don't want the body scan is obviously they feel that's invasive.
Now, the body scan is a X-ray, correct?
It's very, very light amount of radiation from an X-ray. It's not even as much as what they use for X-ray a tooth.
All right, but it does create an image of the individual that shows not nudity necessarily.
No, it's more a view of just the outer, if you will, the outer form of a person to see whether there are objects hidden under the clothing. That is correct, right?
And yet, some people refuse that.
People are allowed to refuse the body scan, yes.
And if they refuse the body scan, Jay, then they go to what? To the
Then they must choose the pat down. If they refuse the pat down, then they are told they may not fly. Now, the pat down is something that we, with the Citizens Voluntary Police, stand at the ready to render, because a lot of people have been upset with the way the TSA does pat down. And
let's talk about that, because the complaints that some people have articulated as the result of these pat downs, that they're a little personal, or they're afraid that they will be personal, that these pat downs are, they get into the private area of men as well as women, no matter what, and that they seem to be, in the minds of the travelers, a little much.
Well, that may or may not be true. I don't, you know, we try, Phil, as members of the Citizens Auxiliary Police, to volunteer and say, we will do the pat down, but let's be very, very clear, because I don't think there should be no misunderstanding. If you don't choose a pat down and you don't choose a body scan, friend, you're not flying.
No, I understand that. I understand that. Now, here's a quote from the LA Times. The public outcry has been more focused on the pat downs, which require TSA agents to search for explosives near passengers' genitals using the open palms of their hands and their fingers.
That is true. That is correct. And that's where we feel we do a much better job than the TSA. TSA might be a little heavy-handed. The TSA may be a bit insensitive. There may very well be men who are probing.
Are men allowed to pat down women? Do we know that?
I don't know. I can tell you it should not make a difference.
But no woman is going to want to be patted down in that way by a man.
I don't know, Phil.
My understanding is that women agents search women.
Well, this is the problem that I think the TSA has. We have primarily male subcommanders, and yet we are able to pat down men and women, and we've not yet had a complaint.
Now, where do you do the patting down? Because you're not officially a TSA people, are you?
No, we are not. But what we will say is, you want us to pat you down? Because we will. And then we will say to the TSA, they're good to go. Now, the TSA, of course, is not going to take our word for it.
but they may, it may cause TSA not to do as invasive a pat-down because they know we said then they're good to go. All right?
They're good to go?
That's correct.
All right. I think what you need to do, and we're talking with Jay Sanis of the Citizens Auxiliary Police on the pat-down procedures that are in place at airports as the result of new guidelines instituted by the TSA. There are body scans, yes, and you may have a body scan, but if you refuse, then the next step is the pat-down. Otherwise, you don't fly, and that's a pretty stark choice. Tell me how you conduct these pat-downs that makes them so different.
Well, the outcry has been that the TSA agents, Phil, are probing with the open palm and the fingers. You do have to do that, but you don't have to do it in a way that communicates or telegraphs to the individual that you're searching that you're awkward and that you're a little ham-fisted and you don't really know what you're doing. What we with the Citizens Auxiliary Police do is it's a very simple technique. We keep the conversation going. We ask them how they're doing, where they're flying to, how their day has been. While we are asking certain questions, we will conduct a certain aspect of the pat-down. If you're asking someone about how are your children, you may do an open palm. If you're saying, boy, I understand they got fantastic restaurants and that, you may do perhaps a one- or two-finger probe. Because what you're trying to do when you're doing either two or three finger probe or one finger probe is you're trying to make sure that the person's not getting alarmed. And so
this is highly graphic. I don't know.
But you're asking me, Phil, what we do that's different.
All right. So what you're telling me is you're doing this differently insofar as you are keeping the conversation going.
Right. But we are keeping the conversation going in different parts of the search in different ways. So again, just to go back, we'll do a two-finger probe, but that's when we are asking them about, hey, there's great restaurants there, have you tried this one, or something like that. Or, you know, if you're asking about how many kids do you have, you're doing an open palm cupping. And I got to tell you, it's embarrassing for a lot of people, I understand that. It's something they don't want to go through. But I think that if you do it the way we do it with Citizens Auxiliary Police, keep the conversation going, and when you have to go to the probe, either the one finger, two finger, three finger, you're asking a question that's going to...
I cannot imagine, well, you know, I don't know what you say a two-finger probe. So what are we talking about? Is this the genitals?
I don't want to call it that. I would say it's in certain areas of the body. If it's the crotch, let's say, yes. If it's an armpit, you're more palming. If it's the buttocks or underneath the buttocks, you're going to do a probe. There's no question you have to do a probe there because of the area to be searched and so forth. And so,
if you're talking about a person's private area and you're searching them for explosives at an airport and you're talking about two and three finger probes into a person's genitals, I don't know how you do that without them getting upset.
Well, what happens, Phil, if someone you're probing says no and you probe, they say no and will not let you probe them, you have to change the conversation and get it more into sports or some area where they won't notice that you've just conducted a three-finger probe, even though they said no, they want no probe, see? And that's it's challenging, and that's what we're trying to tell the TSA. But the TSA, they're slow to learn. I think they will learn it. But I think that the TSA would do themselves world good if they would take some of the technique we're talking about and apply it.
Well, you're talking about them being conversational and they're relaxed, and I got to tell you, there are so many people going through airports and so many people going through the security checkpoints at the different gates. I just don't know how much conversation people have in them, you know?
Well, you know, if you deal with people every day, Phil, you know, how are you? That's a very nice hat you're wearing. Are you going to go surfing? Where are you going on a business trip? That's great. And you know the questions to ask when you're doing a full hand thrust or you're doing a three-finger...
A hand thrust. See, I don't know anything about this. All right, 877-876-PHIL on the world-famous Phil Henry Show as we talk about these new TSA procedures on pat-downs. What are you comfortable with? Are you comfortable with the body scan? What do you think of these new pat-down procedures? Because if you don't want a body scan, you have to be patted down. And if you're patted down, the hand as well as the fingers are used to probe into areas where there may be explosives. 877-876-PHIL. Jay Santos says that with the Citizens Auxiliary Police, it's just a matter of keeping people relaxed. 877-876-PHIL. World famous Phil Henry Show.
It's the Phil Henry Show. You're listening to the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
877-876-PHIL. On the line with me is Jay Santos from the Citizens Auxiliary Police. We're talking about the TSA and primarily the TSA's director, John Pistole, I guess, even though it's spelled P-I-S-T-O-L-E, saying that pat-downs and all of those things are going to continue whether or not people like them because they are important in terms of defending people from a terrorist attack. In other words, keeping our air travel safe. If you don't want a body scan, you must submit to a pat down. Now, here is James Babb, and Mr. Babb is the co-founder of a group called We Won't Fly, and they seek to boycott airports over these new policies. They spoke with MSNBC today to express their concern over the TSA.
Airline pilots do have concerns about the.
Now, that's silly. Where are we at here? This is number three. Here's Mr. Babb.
Well, We Won't Fly is a grassroots response to the new invasive procedures that the TSA is imposing on travelers. Those procedures are including virtual strip searches, radiation, and you may opt out of that, but they will subject you to an intimate groping. This is totally outrageous.
Okay. Jay, what do you say to that?
Well, I think that this is a man who is nervous, and I think he needs to be calmed down a little bit. I think you're going to have people who do not want individuals probing for explosives. They may have some sexual hang-up. I don't know what it is. But if they understand, I'm not here to get my cookies. I'm here to figure out.
I don't know what you mean by that. You mean
getting my sexual joys. I'm here to figure out whether you have explosives or not. And that's what I want to do. So this is a man, if you listen to that man, if you play it one more time, you're listening to a fairly typical hysterical. Can you play that one more time, Phil?
Well, We Won't Fly is a grassroots response to the new invasive procedures that the TSA is imposing on travelers.
Here's a rather hysterical
those procedures
way.
Are including virtual strip searches, radiation, and you may opt out of that, but they will subject you to an intimate groping.
Right there.
This is totally outrageous.
This gentleman has overreacted to the idea of the pat-down, talking about intimate groping. And if he has issues, I certainly understand that that man would have issues, but those are things that one might want to discuss with a therapist or with an individual who's more qualified to discuss that. I don't think you discuss that with Cooper on CNN. I don't think you discussed that.
You're talking about this guy's psychological profile here. He just doesn't want to be patted down.
Well, he's talking about an intimate groping and strip searching and almost as if he wants that to happen. And I can assure you with the members of Citizens Auxiliary Police that I've been with, we have no interest in stripping it. I don't strip no one down. I just want to find out whether or not these people are safe to fly.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. And then we have this from Sully Sullenberger. Here is Captain Sullenberger. We all know who he is, speaking on MSNBC. He expresses issues with the new security procedures from the perspective of pilots.
Airline pilots do have concerns about these screening procedures. First, they're not an effective and efficient use of our limited resources. I think we need to do a much better job of taking a risk-based approach. And I think since airline pilots are already the last line of defense in defending the cockpit against those who might use it for ill, and since we're very trusted partners in this important security process, I think we need to be treated as such.
Now, that's Sully Sullenberger. What do you think of that?
Well, you know, God bless Sully Sullenberger. He was able to, land a plane in a river, but I don't know how that
qualifies him to know about, you know, whether or not we should probe an individual for explosives. And I would just say this again, Phil. We are trying to keep the, you know, the safety of the skies. And
well, what happens if you are if you're patting someone down, or let's say they refuse? If you say they've refused the body scan, and you say, well, look, we'll do a pat down on you, and we'll be very, very gentle, and we won't, you know, probe you, and they refuse.
Well, if you refuse a body scan, and then you turn around and you refuse the pat down, what's happening now is you are pretty much, you know, writing down a sign and holding it up and saying, you know, I'm dirty.
What does dirty mean?
Well, dirty means, you know, you have reason to suspect me. And now, naturally, you're not going to fly. But now, I'm going to have to, you know, go to level two, because now I'm looking at an individual who don't want a body scan, he doesn't want to get patted down. Well, what's he got hidden? And so, naturally, I'm going to ask him his name. And
well, if you tell a guy you're not going to fly and, you know, and that's it, he's not going to give you his name. You know, he's going to turn around and leave the airport.
Well, we're not going to let him leave the airport. I mean, we're going to say, hold up.
And well, what if he's just picking up his bags and saying, the hell with you guys, I'm leaving?
Well, there are ways of walking next to him and just, you know, talking to him and saying, oh, you know, you're tight, you got a spot on your shirt or something. Just ways of slowing him down so he'll check his shirt. And while you've slowed him down, now you can ask him, you know, how do you spell your first name? There are ways of getting their names. And so that's what I want to do. I want to make sure that before they leave the airport, I got a name.
All right, Jay Santa's with us. We'll take your calls here as we talk about these new pat-down procedures from the TSA and Mr. Santos and his group conducting these pat-down searches using two-finger probes, three-finger probe, cupping of the hand, and so forth. 877-876-PHIL. And your calls with Jay Santos, 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. Phil Hendry.
877-876-PHIL, talking here with Jay Santos of the Citizens Auxiliary Police about these pat-down procedures from the TSA and what these mean to the average flyer. Have you done pat-downs at the airport?
Well, Phil, you know that we are not TSA agents. We are a volunteer police agency, but we will offer to do a pat-down of any individual that does not want a body scan, and we'll say to that individual, if you pass the pat-down, we'll certainly give you a thumbs up to TSA and tell them that we're happy. And
well, does the TSA care what you think?
Well, you know, that's a very interesting question. I think that the way we do a pat-down is far more respectful of people. People are very happy with it. And I would hope that when we say to TSA, look, we've had this person down, they're good, that the TSA pat-down is not going to be quite as invasive. I can give an example of, and this is probably, Phil, about as a classic an example as I could give you. We had a woman and her daughter coming up to the body scan area. They refused the body scan. They were waiting to be patted down and looked rather nervous.
And this is a woman and her daughter. How old was the daughter?
Daughter was probably about 10 years old.
All right, so it's a woman and a young girl.
That's correct. And they were waiting for the pat-down, and they did not look happy. They did not like the idea of the pat-down either. I said, ma'am, Jay Santos, Citizens Auxiliary Police, would be happy to do a pat-down. We are far less invasive, and we do it in a way that is more respectful. And this woman assented to that, and I told her that I would be in charge of the initial pat-down, Subcommander Gleason, as well as Subcommander Whitney, would then pat down her daughter. She loosened the belt on her pants and unzipped the back a little bit just so I could get my fingers into those areas. And at the same time, I was telling her that she lived in the same town that I was from, Torrance, and asked her if she knew about a such market. She was very relaxed.
You said you unzipped the back of her pants?
That's correct, yes. But understand something. You don't you're not doing a probe as if you're some kind of an animal. You're doing the probe so as to find...
No, wait. I did not know that that the pat-down involves unzipping clothes.
No, not the TSA pat-down, but the way that we do it, which is far more relaxed. This woman never complained at all, even though we did have to loosen the slacks a little bit. She never complained at all, even though this is called a two-finger, where you're trying to see if there's any kind of a belt holding explosives, and the fingers went down the front of her pants. And
who is doing this, man? Is this a female?
No, sir, this is me.
And you're telling me that at no time did she complain?
No, because with the conference, I was telling her about how we bought our home in Torrance, my wife, my son. She was saying, telling me about a home that her husband and her had purchased in Hawaii. Never did the conversation go away from family. So that even while I've got basically her pants unzipped halfway down, she is comfortable. And same thing with her daughter.
I'm not even going to ask you about the daughter because I don't understand how it is that you can do this and get away with this kind of thing.
Understand, this was voluntary. And she was very happy with the pat-down. And I said to the TSA guy, they're good to go. And so the TSA did a very perfunctory pat-down and good to go.
All right, 877-876-PHIL to Tony in Allentown, Pennsylvania. Tony, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead.
Yeah, so my question is, what is the Citizen Auxiliary Police? Are they operational at all airports in America? And also, this seems a bit over the top in terms of forsaking security. I mean, forsaking our liberty and freedom in the presence of security. I don't want to give up my freedom and liberty just so I can fly. I actually agree with the gentleman you showed from MSNBC there about basically don't fly then because this is not worth the problems and these people want to be free and liberated. So I just want to know basically where do they get their authority from, the Citizens Auxiliary Police, and what is...
Well, our authority... Yes, sir. Well, our authority, we're a volunteer police agency. We are constituted of volunteer citizens who... as we like to say, we will back up police, take a peek over what police are doing, if they need any assistance, if they need any, if a job that they're doing has been done thorough enough, we're happy to come on in and help out. Now, with the TSA, we're at the airport, and I don't know what part of the country this gentleman's in.
Well, he's in Pennsylvania.
I do believe we have a, yes, sir, we do, I do believe we do have a Keystone, we have a Keystone Auxiliary Police, or Keystone Auxiliary Riders, I think, in that area. And what we do is we're at the airport, and we will say to the TSA, well, if you like, or to anybody approaching the security area, if you like, we'll go ahead and give you a pat-down. At which time they'll say, well, we would like that.
Yeah, understand, Tony, people have to choose either a body scan or a pat-down,
which I'm
sure you disagree with, yeah. And so, Jay, if they don't want the body scan, you give them the pat-down.
Well, we don't, but we offer them a far less invasive pat, or at least a more relaxing pat-down, then this TSA fumbling, you know, all these guys don't have high school education or anything like that.
Well,
so
I'll
go ahead and loosen the pants of whoever, and you've got to get your fingers in there and see if there's an explosive or a belt holding something.
Well, so. I understand that what you were saying before about basically trying to be personable, like conversational, trying to get people to be less. Well, I mean, me personally, I don't think any form of conversation could even make it less invasive because I don't know what you think is going to distract people from being patted down in such areas that basically would make them feel uncomfortable. And also, you made a statement about the gentleman that was on the MSNBC, basically, we will not fly, basically questioning his... mental status or overreaction of things. I mean, you don't know him from a hole in the wall. I don't understand why you would actually make that.
Well, the gentleman, yes, sir. Well, the gentleman sounded, and I will say, you know, I don't mean anything, but he sounded a little effeminate. He was
effeminate.
If you heard the gentleman, you could hear him. I don't want to have my, you know. In other words, he turned everything into some sex act. You know, what's that about?
I don't believe you, Citizen Auxiliary Police, or the TSA are, again, like you said, trying to get your cookies. But at the same time, I'm also a person that believes in freedom and liberty, and I'm not willing to mistake it for any security that any government wants to tell me about, because we don't deserve neither if we are willing to give up our freedom and liberty that is a promise to us in our Constitution. So
That's a very valid point, sir. I would just simply say that gentleman is, he said, he used two terms that I found suspicious. First of all, he said strip search. Then he said a fondling and a very intimate, groping, virtual
strip search, like, you know, with the body scanners, just virtual strip search. Basically, it's taking the way of folding to show an image on the computer screen.
Right.
He did not say
You're kind of naked. Yeah, you're kind of naked.
I understand that, but I mean, everything with the guy was all about, I don't want anybody, you know, touching my tinkle. I mean,
he didn't say that.
You're taking things way out of context. What he said, and basically he is not comfortable, and he doesn't want to fly. And I'm glad, actually, I don't really have to fly anywhere, because I think this is, and for those who actually have to travel, you know, through the holidays and things like that, it's more of an intrusion.
I understand, sir, but we're trying to make it more comfortable, and there's nothing I'm going to be able to say or do that's going to make some guy like that guy who's all, you touched my berries, you know.
Jay, you're turning the man into an infant.
Well, he's kind of like, I don't know, he's not the kind of guy I should fool with.
All right. Tony, thank you so much for your call. 877-876-PHIL, and let's move on here to Charles. You're on the Phil Hendry Show with Jay Santos. Go ahead.
Hey, Phil, how you doing? Hey,
good.
Just to give a comment on that guy who says he's from a volunteer police force. One, it reminds me of the nerdy hall monitors back in junior high or middle school. Two, I mean...
far from it, sir. Far from it.
I can
break a man's neck. I can break a man's neck.
Well, here's the other thing.
Well, you can laugh if you want.
You're giving descriptive...
Why do you think that's funny? I'm curious. Why do you think that's funny?
Okay, can I speak?
No, I just want to know, why do you think the fact that I know how to break a man's neck funny? Why do you think
that's
funny?
Can I speak?
Go ahead.
The second thing is...
I apologize.
If I seen you in just my wife's shirt, okay, I'd be a little offended. I'd say what you are is you're a professional pervert who is volunteering your services. And Phil, that's all I got to say.
Well, I want to be able to respond, Mr. Rand. That guy called me a perv.
Well, go ahead.
First of all, I didn't go up anybody's shirt. I didn't go in anyone's shirt. I don't know why the man would say that. What I did do is unzip the lady's pants, because you have to get to any belt that may be holding an explosive.
Oh, my goodness.
And at no time did that woman ever complain. At no time did she ever complain that we were being inappropriate.
Well, of course, you're talking the pants off of her.
I don't think you're married.
As a guy to publicly get away with filling people up and making them happy, feel happy about it.
I don't think you're married. I don't think you have a wife. I don't think you've ever been with a woman. I think you've been with men, but I don't think...
All right. Thanks very much, Charles. 877-876-PHIL. You're going to get people complaining that way, though. You're going to have a lot of people saying, because you're talking about things that I've never heard of.
Such as
when you're searching somebody, you unbutton their belt? I've never heard of such a thing.
This is a kind of... First of all, Phil, let me ask you a question. Do you want people patted down properly?
Yes, I do want them patted down properly, and I really don't know what that is. A professional police officer who is patting someone down for weapons does a pretty thorough job. They go up the leg, they go right into the crotch, they go right into the armpits. We know what they do, and that's what the TSA, I guess, is doing. But you say that you have a better method whereby you're unbuttoning people's pants.
What are you laughing about?
I don't know how is this a more...
You know, you're laughing, Mr. Henry, but I've got the proof that at LAX, we did a pat-down search of some... Probably on that day, there were 10 or 11 women. 10 or 11 women whose pants were halfway down their hips, and not one of them complained.
Bull crap, man. I'm buying that.
Why do you call it bullcrap?
Because I don't believe you, man. I don't believe... What do you mean 10 or 11 had their pants halfway down their hips?
Because that's what you have to do in order to do the three-finger probe. And
I don't know what you mean by a three-finger probe, and I don't know what any of that has to do with. You're telling me you're unbuttoning pants and you're unzipping pants, and you're going up. This guy thought you were talking about, do you go up a woman's skirt?
You know something, Phil? The way you make it sound dirty. And what we're trying to do is save lives.
All right, but do you go up somebody's skirt?
You lift the skirt up using a baton or any other implement that a police officer will have. So you lift it up.
Right.
And you lift it up with the baton, and then you bend over and just look.
Uh-huh.
But what, you think I'm a... What's wrong with that?
All right, hold the line. 877-876-PHIL. I'm just talking to a guy here who's telling me that... He strip searched these. He hasn't strip searched anybody, but he's doing these pat downs. 10 or 11 women with their with their pants halfway down their hips, and none of them complained. I don't think so. 877-876-PHIL. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
You're listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show. Phil Hendry.
877-876-PHIL. Jay Sano's continuing with us here on the Phil Hendry Show as we talk about the TSA's patting people down. And Mr. Sano's, with the greatest of respect, while you attempt to pat people down in a respectful way, I know what the gentleman said from We Won't Fly.
To me, that man sounded to me like the kind of very nervous individual who is going to spread a lot of...
I know what he said. I heard what he said, but the bottom line is that he is reflecting an opinion. Are these pat-downs too invasive? And
I think I've been very clear, Mr. Henry, in saying that our pat-downs are not invasive, even though you have to be invasive in order to do an effective pat-down. If you're doing an effective pat-down where you're looking for weapons, you're looking for explosives, you're looking for something that's really harm people... You have to get your hands up into someone's crotch. Yes. Yes, you do. But there's a way of doing it in a way where you're not going to make anyone feel, you know, probed or have a, you know, feel like someone has a finger up there. And the way to do that is with relaxing people, make them feel comfortable.
Okay, but I find it very hard to believe, sir, you said you had women with their pants off.
I didn't say with their pants off.
No, you said you had, you're unzipping pants and you're undoing belts and you're putting your fingers down the fronts of women's pants and they're completely comfortable.
Hey, Mr. Henry, there were no complaints because we're professional and guess what? No planes blew up in the air either. So we know that...
Well, you had to send them through the pat-down anyway.
Well, that's true, but the TSA, after they saw what we did... They're almost ashamed to do their pat-down because they know their pat-down ain't nowhere near as good as ours.
All right. 877-876-PHIL on the Phil Hendry Show. Let's go to Chris in Boston listening on WTKK. Chris, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Yeah, my first question is, who did the pat-down on the little female, the daughter there? Was that you?
On the lady yesterday, that was Sub-Commander Gleason.
Excuse me?
That was Sub-Commander Gleason.
Yeah, who actually conducted the pat down? Was it a male on a little female?
That was male.
That was a male conducting a pat down on a little female.
That is correct, yes, sir. But done in a way that is very respectful, and you hardly notice.
I
don't think there's any respectful way for a male to pat down a little female. That should be done by at least a female.
You do it in a way where you're just talking about, hey, you know, where are you going on your birthday? And
meanwhile, you got your hands down her pants?
No, not my hand. Boy, you really know how to take something and turn it into filth, don't you, Mr. Hendry?
Well, what did you say when you got their pants halfway off?
I didn't say halfway off. I said down their hips.
Same thing with a little girl?
Well, now I have to ask a question, if you don't mind. It sounds to me, Mr. Hendry, like you and this gentleman from Boston are... Excuse me for saying this, but what are you guys, getting your kicks now or something?
What is that supposed
Absolutely
to mean?
Not. What do you guys, well, what do you want all this detail for?
We
want
to know how you're doing. Go ahead, Chris. I keep talking. I apologize.
That's fine. That's my fault. Last person I heard that patted down a little girl, I think went to jail. I think that's against the law at some point.
Who is that? Who is that?
You're not allowed. You're not allowed to pat down kids.
Oh, I see. I can't pat down a kid, and so I'll feel better about myself as I'm driving home and I hear a distant boom over the Atlantic Ocean. Because that's what could very well happen. And, sir, you're in Boston, and I don't need to remind you what happened at Logan Airport on a day much like today back in 2001. Yeah. So I...
Well, nobody has to be reminded of 9/11, but what this man's asking is very true. How do you pat down a little girl?
Both of you guys are asking me this question over and over again. It sounds to me like trying to get your cookies.
You know what? That's insulting to me. We're trying to find out whether or not you guys are sensitive to the nature of what it is you're doing and are making sure that whatever you do, you know, you say that you haven't had any complaints, and yet in the same breath you tell me you had the pants halfway down 11 women.
If you keep saying that...
All right, you had them halfway down their hips. What difference does it make?
There is a very big difference, Mr. Henry. And as far as who did the pat down on the 11-year-old, I think it was Sub-Commander Gleason... Who, by the way, and I, you know, this may make you feel better, Sub-Commander Gleason, legally blind.
Yeah?
Yeah, that doesn't figure in.
No, it doesn't. 877-876-PHIL. Here is, I believe it's Marion. Go ahead, Marion, you're on the Phil Henry Show.
Yes, I'm a woman, and I don't feel like any man should be allowed to touch me in any way, shape, or form without my permission, and I'm telling you that that man standing in a uniform and presenting himself as a policeman is taking away my rights, and no more, as far as I'm concerned, he would be doing a rape on me. I don't care.
I asked your permission. I'm not going to do anything you want me to do. This is in order for you to satisfy the Transportation Safety Administration.
You're full of baloney, mister. All you're trying to do is get your rocks off on a woman. You're a make-believe cop, and you're wanting to stand up and look at me, everybody. I'm getting to touch somebody.
Ma'am, I can assure you that, yes, I'm an official police. I don't have official police standing, but I do wear a blue armband. And when
you are nothing more than a pervert. That's all you are. You're wanting to get your rocks off on some woman that thinks you're an authority because you're presenting yourself as an authority figure. And that's all it amounts to.
If I said to you, I will search you in a very respectful way.
You wouldn't search me, period.
Well, ma'am, I had 11 women with their pants unbuttoned and not a woman.
I don't believe you. So now I'm a liar, too.
Phil Henry.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Henry.
It's ridiculous, and it's not safer. They're just doing it.
I just drank it probably a couple times, and
I'm looking at the lay of the land now and trying to figure that out if it's a good thing.
I heard you speak for the overwhelming number of our membership.
I'm Fred Thompson, and I approve this message.
Bastard from a basket.
World famous Phil Henry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Where truth is our bitch. And where we head to the looking glass and beyond, man, to go places other talk shows just dream about going, baby. Some are upset that Bristol Palin made it to the finals of Dancing with the Stars. In fact, some old guy in Florida, I guess it was, maybe it's just because he was in Florida, some old guy in Florida found out that Bristol Palin had gone to the finals of Dancing with the Stars and took a gun and shot his television set.
Yeah, what did police say?
It ain't what the cops said. It's what the old man said when the cops showed up. The old guy shoots his TV set. He says, she ain't that good of a dancer.
Yeah, they don't care about whether she's a good dancer. They just don't like her.
Well, that's it. Yeah. But this old guy, 60, I say old guy, I'm 58, what the hell? Anyway.
Yeah, he's an old guy.
Yeah, he is an old guy. He took his Smith & Wesson, and he went ahead and he wrecked his TV set with this thing. His Bristol Palin won Dancing with the Stars. So that's coming up here in this hour, in our news hour. The FDA officially goes after Four Loko and similar drinks, including one drink that claims it's just a beer, and they don't get why they have been singled out. And we'll talk about that. It's interesting. It does seem that they've just thrown this big net out and said, you all suck. And at least one of them has said, what did we do? You know, nobody died drinking our stuff. So there's that. Plus, finally, a winner in the Alaska Senate race. Our website is philhendryshow.com. That's philhendryshow.com, with live streaming video of our show and live streaming audio of the show, and a brand new Classic Phil podcast, in fact, is up on the website right now, called The Jesus Clone, with Jeff Dowder from October of 1999, and daily podcasts at iTunes. Plus, on Saturday night, we start a local broadcast on KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. That is our station here in Los Angeles. And the reason why I mention that, for those of you who are not in L.A., you can still watch the video cast of that show on our website, philhendryshow.com, and be able to download the show on Monday. So where do we start here, man? With Dancing with the Stars? Is that it?
I just want to know the man, whatever, who shot his TV.
Yeah, I got that story someplace, man. Yeah, some cat, he did. He took a gun to his television set and blew the bloody TV set away. But in any event, the Dancing with the Stars voters have come out in droves to keep Bristol the Pistol Palin in the competition, is what they're calling her. And let me just get over here to our Palin audio. I know I've got a little bit of this. Here is Bristol Palin. And on Dancing with the Stars last night, she explained she's getting so far in the competition because the voters are connecting with her.
She's working hard. She's the first person in 11 seasons that is 100% normal, doesn't have sort of career.
That's two, bud. Were you out of your mind? I want number one. I want something that sounds like a girl, something that sounds like...
I'm definitely relatable to the audience out there, and untouched and raw and vulnerable.
No offense to anyone else, but I'm not fake. People do connect with me because they feel I'm real, and I'm not typical Hollywood.
There you go. And now, on Dancing with the Stars, in an interview with Access Hollywood, Bristol Palin's dancing partner, Matt Ballas, agrees Bristol's relatable. People want her to win.
She's working hard. She's the first person in 11 seasons that is 100% normal, doesn't have any sort of career in entertainment, whether it's reality TV, singing, acting, dancing. A boy band group, girl, not an athlete, you know, and that's what the show's about. Someone who can't dance and turn him into a dancer. And to take her this far is one of my proudest moments. And I think people who have normal lives, normal 9-to-5s, come home to their normal family and turn on their normal TV set, think, man, if I was doing that, that's how I would be. And that's why they pick up the phone.
Plus, they don't like Brandy. One of the judges yelled out,
"Bastard from a basket!"
So they just told her to get lost. Anyway, so Dancing with the Stars, they love her, and the blogosphere, you know the blogosphere, that's where all these people write blogs. Most of them suck. Anyway, in the blogosphere, they're speaking out about the controversial news that the improved yet still low-scoring teen activist and political daughter beat out the likes of Kurt Warner, Rick Fox. Kurt Warner's a football player. Rick Fox is a basketball player. Who says these guys know how to dance?
Yeah, you're a football player. You got, especially a quarterback.
Yeah, quarterback got to have footwork. Footwork? Are you kidding me? Have you ever seen Kurt Warner on a football? Kurt Warner is a great, he's a pocket passer. You want to know why they call him that?
Uh-uh.
Because he ain't got no footwork. All right, so you got Rick Fox, Adriana Partridge, and Brandy. Let the conspiracy theories begin, said the Wall Street Journal speakeasy blog after Tuesday night. Are people getting tired of being that simple-minded about things? Isn't that just ridiculous? I forget, what was the most recent story having to do with a conspiracy theory? It's boring. Oh, well, that's obvious. There must be a... No, it ain't obvious. It's just people are getting lazy with their thinking, that's all. Something happens that people don't like. It's got to be a conspiracy. Why is that? Because to actually know what happened in real life means we have to think about it. And who wants to do all that work? So after Tuesday night, it should be plainly obvious to anyone even barely paying attention to the 11th season that ABC and Dancing with the Stars have, for want of a better phrase, a Bristol problem, wrote Vern Gay in Newsday. Yeah, I'll bet. Jimmy Kimmel called Brandy the latest victim of Hurricane Bristol and suggested an organized Tea Party voting bloc was behind Brandy's elimination. Kimmel's kidding, though. The rest of these guys are serious. Perhaps the most violent reaction came from a 67-year-old. Oh, this was in Wisconsin. Sorry, Florida.
Yeah, it's either Wisconsin or Florida. And one is Florida. The other one is where Ed Gein's from. Everything like that.
True. Oh, yeah. The mystery missile off the coast. Thank you very much, Jace. So if it ain't Bristol Palin, then they have this mystery missile off the coast of California. Well, it just has to be from outer space. Although, you know what? I think people are finally getting it, because there might have been a time when that mystery missile off the coast of California would have become a big story. But now, survival, recession, serious business is on the table. Nobody got any time for any of your bullcrap. The most violent reaction came from a 67-year-old Wisconsin man who had a standoff with authorities. A standoff?
What do you mean, like a stand? Like he had a sandbag or something?
That's what the intimation is. Who had a standoff with authorities and was charged with second-degree reckless endangerment when he reportedly shot his television after Bristol Palin's performance. God, that's funny. Citing that he didn't think she was a good dancer. I could well imagine what they... All right, so you're under arrest. I didn't want to see it. I don't care about it. You know?
Sound like something you'd do.
Something I'd do? Well, I might shoot my TV, man. It wouldn't be about this. And, of course, there was no shortage of theories posted by commenters themselves. Here's a sampling of the Bristol buzz on the Internet. Oh, this ought to be good. The brain surgery that comes out on this stuff. The only reason Bristol is still there is due to viewers. Well, no kidding. Isn't that what it's about? She cannot dance and definitely doesn't deserve to be in the finals. This season's voting results had nothing to do with talent or skill, because if it did, Bristol should have been voted off the first week! Exclamation point. It's a popularity contest that has gone horribly wrong at other people's expenses, as is, said SB. Apparently, many Americans prefer mediocrity. Thanks, Tea Party! Exclamation point, wrote Tiki. Still others chalk it up to the nature of the game. Haters, the girl embodies what the show is about, non-dancers learning to dance. That's what I thought it was about. I thought it was how good the amateurs are, you know. And yeah, it's a voting, the audience votes. That's what makes the show popular. If it was just a bunch of judges, it probably wouldn't matter. But people are going to vote for, you never can tell who people vote for, man. However, the thing that is missing here, in sports, the underdog doesn't necessarily win. You know what I'm saying?
What do you mean?
I mean, in sports, the underdog doesn't necessarily win.
What?
Do you guys know what I'm talking about when I say underdog?
Yeah.
Does the underdog always win in sports?
No. Oh, okay. I understand.
Yeah. The underdog sometimes loses in sports, so it makes it dramatic when we're all rooting for an underdog. You know, we're all, man, I really want this team to win. Something akin to the underdog happened last year in the world of sports. Again, it completely, you know, I don't know what it is. Maybe Jason will remind me. I can't remember, but there was an instance where we were all behind a particular team. And it just seemed like even the team that was favored knew that everybody was behind the team they were going up against, and they were almost rooting for them, you know. But not always. Maybe it was the USA during the World Cup, yeah. But not always does our favorite underdog win in sports. Whereas in American Idol and in the other, you know, this Dancing with the Stars, the underdog almost always does win. They have to get past that initial judging, you know, that always made it kind of interesting. But the underdog has a much, much bigger chance when it comes to this. Here are some other comments. So Stephanie came out. She was a blogger, a commenter, and she said, Bristol Palin, she's the real deal. And there are those who believe that Brandy was ousted by her own hand, that Brandy just sucks. You know, see, that's... Brandy's obsession to win was a bit of a turnoff, says Carlos. The other contestants seemed like they were there to have fun. I picked against Brandy for that reason alone, said Carlos. So, you see, this is the difference, and this is the challenge for those of us who work in the media, and I work in the media about as intimately as anybody, and everybody that I work with, we're all in broadcasting, and there is a huge disconnect sometimes between where I sit and where you guys are sitting. And we talk about this every night on the show.
How do we know what real people are thinking? We know what the blogosphere thinks, and we know what the this and that think, and we know the that think, and the this think, and the that think, and the this think. We got more big mouths, but the big mouths are like the squeaky wheel. They're getting the grease, they're getting all the attention, but are they the heart and the very soul of the common man and the opinion of the country? So you can look at these blogospheres, and everybody talking conspiracy about Bristol Palin. Guess what? People like her. They really do. Okay.
That sounds like that's Sally Field, though, when you've done that that way.
Yeah, thank you. That's what I was going for. Anyway, more details on the Wisconsin shooter story, by the way. His name was Stephen Cowan. He shot the TV after saying he was fed up with politics and Palin wasn't a very good dancer, according to the court documents. Mr. Cowan is 67 of the town of Vermont, Wisconsin, 15 miles west of Madison. Then he pointed the gun at his wife, 66-year-old Janice, who escaped and called police. Good God. A SWAT team surrounded the couple's farmhouse. The officers were able to talk Cowan out Tuesday morning after an all-night standoff. Cowan had been drinking beer before he sat down to watch Dancing with the Stars. He suffers from bipolar disorder. Thanks a lot, Dancing with the Stars. So here's a guy with bipolar. He owns a gun. His wife is there. You know, the day ain't going good. And the next thing you know, Bristol Palin wins. That did it. That did it. Oh, my God. That's it. Just get the sandbags now, man.
That guy flipped his lid on kind of Bristol Palin. Take his medicine.
Well, there's an idea. Take your medicine there, Mr. Cowan. All right, coming up, Four Loko and similar drinks are now officially in the crosshairs of the FDA. Is it fair? Because Four Loko, somebody conked out on that stuff. Does that mean everybody's stuff goes down the crapper? Let's find out. 877-876-PHIL, world famous, Phil Hendry Show.
It's the Phil Hendry Show. You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
We do have a lot of Sarah Palin news. We don't really have Sarah Palin news so much as we have Palin family news, one having to do with her daughter, one having to do with the governor, but we just can't bring ourselves to overdose on Palin news right away. We don't want to, and so we won't, although one of them has to do with her daughter being a homophobe. Now, anyway.
The same one as a dancer?
No, a different one, the younger one.
Oh, great, man. So the older one can dance, and the younger one don't like gays.
Pretty much, yeah. The older one can dance, and the younger one doesn't like gays. And the mom is running for president. Now, I don't think there's anything unusual about that family, by the way.
Yeah, they sound normal.
FDA calls 7 caffeine alcohol drinks, including 4 Loko, unsafe, brother. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration told the manufacturers of 7 caffeinated alcoholic beverages Wednesday that their drinks suck and are a public health concern, and you're going to kill people. Now get them off the market. I don't care how much money you're making with them. What do you think about that? And they can't stay on the market, and that's just where that's at. And the people who make the drinks went, are you serious? Yes. The move follows a year-long review by the FDA. Year-long?
Well, what do you mean year-long and a 4 Loko just come up?
I don't know. It was a year-long review by the FDA, which gave the companies 15 days to either reformulate their products or face possible seizure under federal law. Year-long, huh? And it just so happens that they concluded this study just on or around the date that 4 Loko started making people loco? Okay. They gave them 15 days to either reformulate their product or face possible seizure under federal law, according to Dr. Joshua Sharfstein, the agency's principal deputy commissioner. Experts have said the caffeine used in the beverages can mask the effects of alcohol, leaving drinkers unaware of how intoxicated they is. FDA does not find support for the claim that the addition of caffeine to these alcoholic beverages is generally recognized as safe, which is the legal standard, Sharfstein told reporters. To the contrary, there is evidence that the combinations of caffeine and alcohol in these products pose a public health concern. 220-somethings in New York City talk with NBC about their experiences drinking 4 Loko.
What's great about this drink is that it's cheap. And not only that it's cheap, it's only $3. You drink 1 4 Loko, and you're where you want to be. You're saucy. You're just chilling like, ooh.
My heart starts messing up. It's like skipping, and then I just feel like I'm on like some other drug. I feel like I'm on a drug. I'm not myself on that.
I'm sure. You're where you want to be, man. All right. Anyway, here are students at the University of Memphis talking to My Fox Memphis about four. No go.
No, I just drank it probably a couple times.
I'll bet.
I didn't really have like any bad experience as far as like being sick or anything like that.
I only tasted it once, and I don't know the effects or nothing, but I don't think it's nothing wrong with it.
In really? College and stuff, a lot of people like to overindulge, and I think that's more of the concern of why people are hospitalized.
I don't really think it's a good thing. I wouldn't do it because energy drinks just kind of make me tweaky, and yeah. I don't want to be drunk and tweaky, so it's just not very practical. I think there needs to be like more awareness of like, the health risks associated with that, because that's just not healthy at all.
I've been vegetarian for 7 years, going on 8.
All right. So
that last chick.
Never mind. But he don't want to get tweaky, man. Drunk and tweaky? Forget it. So the FDA does not find support for the claim that this stuff is good for you, so get it out of our lives. One of the companies that received warning letters was Fusion Projects of Chicago, Illinois. They make Four Loko, the drink nicknamed Blackout in a Can by some of its users. Oh, man. That don't sound too healthy to me. The company announced Tuesday that it was dropping caffeine and two other ingredients, guarana and taurine. Now, look those up, will you guys? G-U-A-R-A-N-A, which I believe guarana is some kind of a speed, ain't it? And then taurine, T-A-U-R-I-N-E, which sounds to me like an amino acid. Guarana sounds like some wild South American root.
That's probably what they put on the end of on a spear or something.
What do you mean a spear?
Don't you ever know what I heard about them headhunting?
They don't put that on, what do you mean on a spear? They don't put that on the end of a spear.
What's the stuff they put on a spear on account I've seen it in Papillon?
That ain't the stuff, bud. I don't know what it is. You mean the spear that paralyzes people?
Yeah.
I don't know. Don't worry about it, man. That ain't it that you saw in Papillon. All right, so that's Four Loko. But now, ladies and gentlemen, there are other things afoot. The other companies are the San Diego-based United Brands, which manufactures the Juice and Max brands, Portland, Oregon's Charge Beverages, which sells Core High Gravity HG, Core High Gravity HG Orange, and Lemon Lime Core Spiked, and then a company called New Century Brewing of Boston, which makes Moonshot. Now, New Century proprietor Rhonda Kalman told CNN she's puzzled by the FDA's decision to include moonshot. She said, I don't know what to say except I'm shocked about the outcome of the FDA's inquiry. I need more answers than what I've gotten. She described moonshot as a craft beer. A craft beer. She says the other brands are what they call neon green. They're not beer. They're just juice spiked up. But their drink is a craft beer that has about 4% alcohol by weight and about two-thirds the caffeine of a cup of coffee, and it's sold in only 3 cities, she said, and yet it's being singled out with Four Loko and juice. It sounds like they've taken every product with alcohol and caffeine in it, you know.
Yeah, they're saying that they got to look at that and maybe they'll revisit it.
They ain't saying nothing about revisiting it. I think this lady's got a point. I think this company's got a point. This, what they call neon green, these brands that are just nothing but juice, where they just pump the alcohol and the caffeine into it, okay, as opposed to her product, which is a beer, but they're doing something different with the beer. They're putting a little bit of caffeine into the beer. And you know why that is. I mean, that's obviously where the demand is. You know, people get too stupid and too slow and too sloppy and too drunk, man.
Yeah, but that's why they're drinking more of the Four Loko and everything.
Well, that's just a bad... I mean... That just isn't cool. And you know what? I don't think anybody really looked into it, man. You know what your market's going to be. Your market's going to be college students. And so what are you telling them? Go ahead and power this stuff back and you'll be fine? I don't know. We'll be back with more on the world-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL. Coming up, Sarah Palin's daughter, Willow, she might hate gays. Plus, a reverend doesn't want you on Facebook. Plus, NCIS, are they able to hold off Glee? Plus, well, we'll be right back.
Phil Henry.
I get some neon green.
This is the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Hey, welcome back here, and our website, philhenryshow.com, and all that. 877-876-PHIL here with Robert Leonard and Bud Dickman in our news hour here. Which one do you guys want me to do?
Well, do that homophobic one. I want you to tell that story about that guy that married a Coke bottle.
No guy married a Coke bottle, okay?
No, that's what you said. A guy said.
Okay. Here's the point that I was making with you guys. Sarah Palin's daughter, Willow, has allegedly used multiple homophobic slurs on Facebook, including the word F-A-G, you know.
Yeah.
To attack a Facebook user who criticized her mother's new reality show. And this according to TMZ. So this child, the 16-year-old daughter, Willow, used these homophobic words, including the F word. During the premiere of Sarah Palin's Alaska on Sunday night, a boy named Trey, who went to school with the Palin kids, wrote a status update that read, "Sarah Palin's Alaska is failing so hard right now." The comment sparked an intense response from Willow, who replied on the boy's wall, "Ha ha, you're so gay, I have no idea who you are, but what I've seen pictures of, you're disgusting. My sister had a kid and is still hot." What does that mean? What's that mean?
I don't know.
My sister had a kid and is still hot? Anyway, Willow followed up that comment with another that read, "Trey, STFU."
Yeah, that means...
I know what it means. You're such a F-got. Bristol Palin also got in on the smack talk, writing a message to Trey saying, "You're running your mouth just to talk SH blankety blank." Eventually, a message board was erupted. And Bristol took aim at another person named John, saying, "You'll be as successful as my baby daddy, and actually, I do work my ass off. I've been a single mom for 2 years. After more users began to gang up on the Palins, Willow dropped another message that read, "Sorry that you guys are all jealous of my family's success, and you guys aren't going to go anywhere with your lives." Those are all legitimate comments.
Yeah, but she said F-word.
Yeah, I understand that. Well, here's the point that I... Well, let me just finish the story. Sources connected to the Palin family tell us that Willow normally doesn't use this type of language, but she felt like she was being attacked along with her family. The source added it was the baby bear defending Mama Grizzly and the F word. You're such a F, you know. Now, people that don't like Palin are going to say, "Why don't you treat your, you know, raise your children better?" And I think that that would be a legitimate comment, you know. I was saying to the guys, I remember a time when using that word was not grounds for punishment at all. I remember when I was growing up, you could use the N-word and use F. I suppose in some homes, it was singled out. You don't say that, you know. Or if it was used in my house, my parents would say something along the lines of, "You know, don't use that word. You shouldn't. We don't want to hear that." But it wasn't grounds for any kind of serious punishment. Certainly wasn't grounds for any kind of serious punishment at school. I mean, nobody ever said it in a classroom, but on the playground. And then, of course, the F word, too. So what you got in trouble for was MF and F and all that stuff, you know.
Yeah, but what about that guy marrying a Coke bottle?
Okay, I'll get to the guy marrying the Coke with Bud's all laughing his ass off. I mean, when you got into high school or even in grade school, especially though when I got into high school, guys are always calling each other gay. Even gay guys are calling each other in high school. Everybody, you know, everyone's an F and everyone. But sometimes it isn't just that. It's, you know, when I was in high school, one of the guys yelled one day in the locker room, "Hey, Hefner, why don't you go marry a Coke bottle?" So
that's hysterical. What, that don't mean he's gay, though.
I don't know what it means. No, it doesn't mean he's gay. It means he's hard up. That's what it means. Cat can't get a girl. That's what it meant. You can't find a woman. Go marry a Coke bottle. And all that kind of stuff. That's generally the talk among young men. And kids are going to talk, and kids are going to talk crap, and, you know, you smack it out of them. I don't know. You don't smack it out of them, whatever you want to do. But I'll tell you this much. Nobody cares. Especially people that don't like Palin, they'll be jumping all over her because her kid said the F word. So she's either going to have to tell these kids stay off of Facebook or use a different name, or when someone baits you, because there's Willow and Bristol, and they're both jumping in and both doing battle with God knows how many of these people that are posting, and you're never going to win that fight. So that was kind of an interesting occurrence, I guess, yesterday there on Facebook. Meanwhile, speaking of Facebook, there's a reverend in New Jersey who's telling the people in his church, "Thou shalt not commit adultery, and so stay off of Facebook because it's too much temptation." Yeah, man. That's the edict from a New Jersey pastor who feels the two often go together. Cedric Miller said 20 couples among the 1,100 members of his Living Word Christian Fellowship Church have run into marital trouble over the last 6 months after a spouse connected with an ex-flame over Facebook. Because of the problems, he's ordering about 50 married church officials to delete their accounts with the social networking site or resign from their leadership positions. He had previously asked married congregants to share their login information with their spouses and now plans to suggest that they give up Facebook altogether. You know, the whole thing with Facebook, I don't care about this crap, but getting back to kids, there isn't a reason in the world why if you've got a kid, you shouldn't know what they're, what's going on their Facebook page. I'm serious, you know. And you know, what, bud?
Well, that's like reading their diary or something.
No, that ain't like reading their diary.
No, it isn't, man, because that's out in the open.
It is. It's out in the open, and you can, because they haven't friended you on Facebook or whatever. They're out there doing business in public, whether it's conversation or whatever crap they're doing, man. That ain't reading their diary. That's getting in on whatever it is your kid's involved in publicly. And, you know, I remember, I used to say this. I said, why can't we just go and see whether the kids are visiting porn sites? Because that was the concern at one time, you know. Are they visiting these porn sites? And I never really did, but I remember saying to the kids one time, I mean, I never went into their computers and looked, but I remember saying to the kids one time, I said to one of them, I said, if I go to your computer right now, man, and I hit history, am I going to find any porn sites? Nope. They just, well, without even hesitation, no, you will not. So if I went there right now, man.
Yeah, they might have been running a bluff on you.
Running a bluff? Well, what do you mean running a bluff?
Maybe they're just trying to bluff you.
Bluff me? So what if I said, okay, then I'm going and I'm going to look.
All right, and then there's a porn site, they'll say I forgot about it.
Oh, bull crap. You don't ask somebody, hey, is there porn on your site? And then they go, oh, yeah, and I forgot about that one.
Yeah, it's probably some website, you know, featuring like old women or something. Oh, yeah, well, I don't know if that count, you know. Because you to do that, man, you could say, I don't know that count.
What doesn't count?
If you go to a porn site, it's old ladies, does that count?
Yes, it counts.
Even if you're like a teenager?
I don't care. Yes, it counts.
Why?
What do you mean, why?
Yeah, it's not even, if it's an old lady site. Okay, and it has pictures of...
Bud, don't tell. I know what you're talking about. You mean if I got a teenage son?
Yeah, you got a teenage son, and the only porn he visits is old ladies. Would you say, oh, well, that's cool? Well, would you or wouldn't you?
Yeah, that's cool. Can you imagine me doing that, man?
Well, wow, what's wrong with that?
What do you mean, what's wrong with it? If I went to my son's computer and I log in, and the only porn he has on there is old women, huh?
Yeah.
Would I say that's cool? No, but I mean, I'll tell you. I guess I'd have some serious concerns. I don't know what to say, you know.
See, like that, man. It ain't all porn.
Yeah, what if it was old ladies peeing? Will you shut up? Now you're making me sick, man.
But you did say it may not be porn.
It's porn, man. Don't worry about it, okay?
Would you think there's something wrong with him?
Yeah, I probably would. I guess I would, yeah.
Why?
What is it with you guys all of a sudden, man, asking me all these questions? I don't know why, wouldn't you? If you had like a 16-year-old son and the only porn that he saw, the only porn he liked was old ladies?
Yeah, on P sites.
Hey, bud, shut up.
Well...
Yeah, I'd probably think it was pretty freaking weird.
What if it was like Blackzilla takes on Granny? And if
you shut up with Blackzilla, you and Blackzilla, man.
Well, you know, so in other words, you realize that some porn, even for like a 16-year-old, is scary.
I don't know if it's scary, man. I don't know what any of it means. I know that I don't think there's anything abnormal about a teenage boy being interested in naked women. I'll tell you that right now. That's about as normal as it gets. Or if he so chooses and he's a young man who is gay, then naked guys. But the fact is, it's a period of life where that's just about all they think about. So I don't know whether or not it's good, bad, or indifferent. I in terms of old ladies, you know. I just made me laugh, bud, when you said that because... All right, TV ratings. Glee rises, CBS falls, but still wins Tuesday night. Why? Because CBS appeals to all the old people. Why? Because that's where all the viewers are. Why? I don't know. I'll tell you why, because it's all us baby boomers, and all we watch is all that rural crap, I guess. Anyway, CBS brought in 15.6 million viewers and a 9.6 rating, that's a 16 share, in households Tuesday night, down a tick from last week's performance. ABC was in second, and they were flat despite No Ordinary Family taking a hit. Fox came in third, followed by NBC, and the CW wiping up the rear. Now, Fox claimed the top spot, though, as usual, in adults 18 to 49 with a 3.6 rating, beating CBS by a half a point. NBC got their ass handed to them. At 8 o'clock at night, CBS's NCIS was the winner. And guess what? It beat Glee. That's right. The fair-haired boy Glee got its ass handed to it by CBS's NCIS. And that show sucks. So what does that tell you? CBS has got a lot of old creeps, you know.
Probably a lot of the old ladies that your 16-year-old kid want to look at. That's what they see.
That's right, bud. All the old women that my 16-year-old son wants to look at nude, they're knocking off for the night. They're watching NCIS.
Right.
The 18 to 49-year-old leader, though, was Glee. 9 p.m., ABC's Dancing with the Stars, and they took over the lead there. Over NCIS, in a distant third, was NBC's The Biggest Loser, all them fat people trying to lose weight. Sounds like a great show, but no. And Fox, with Raising Hope, got their ass kicked down the stairs, down a set of metal stairs, I might add. And who was the 18 to 49-year-old leader? Dancing with the Stars. So Glee, Dancing with the Stars, and finally, 10 o'clock, CBS wins another hour with The Good Wife. How come there ain't no Fox at 10 o'clock? What's going on there?
I don't know.
What happens to Fox at 10, man? Do they, they don't have programming at 10, really? Fox does, do they do national? No, they don't do national news. There's no such thing as national news. Oh, you know what? The local stations go to, that's why Channel 11 in L.A. goes. All right. So there is the result of that, ladies and gentlemen. Now, I don't know why let's go to a break. I forget where we were.
You're talking about Facebook.
Well, I was talking about people. Yeah, delete your Facebook accounts. We'll be back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
This
I'm all blown
is the
away
world
by
world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Granny thing.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico. Phil Hendry.
All right, welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Every night until 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. News Talk and Entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Robert and Bud with me here. And we now enter into our final story of the evening, Robert and Bud. Do you know who, Ronnie Chasen was?
Yeah, well, I know what she done.
Yeah, she's a publicist.
A publicist. Now, the other night, Ronnie Chasen, who is a Hollywood publicist, and this is someone who publicizes the projects that she's hired to publicize, whether they be films, whether they be the career of a actor or actress or a public personality, whatever it may be, their job is to make sure that their client is getting a fair piece of the media's attention every day. This event happened. They went to this. Their movie's coming out. Here's they just did an interview, and the names of their clients are in the media. And Ronnie Chasen was one of the best. But the other night, in one of the most bizarre happenings in Hollywood, and very tragic in recent memory, Ms. Chasen was shot to death in her still moving Mercedes-Benz on Sunset Boulevard. Now, the police are left with more questions than answers a day after a well-known movie publicist shot to death on a winding side street. Now, somebody said it was on Sunset. Now we find out. And all it takes is 24 hours, man. And you're going to find out how they got the story wrong right out of the gate.
Yeah, they said it was on Sunset.
Well, guess what? A winding side street, now they're calling it. Was Ronnie Chasen, the veteran press agent and Oscar strategist, simply the victim of a carjacking gone terribly wrong, which is what we speculated about?
Yeah, it didn't make any sense then, man. If you're a carjacker, they would have taken her car.
Well, yeah, they would have taken her car. Had the killer followed her as she drove home from a premiere party for the movie Burlesque? Did somebody want Miss Chasen dead? Was the person or people responsible in the car with her? Is it somebody she knew? you know.
Yeah, if you look on an investigation discovered, you're going to look and see about a husband, too.
Yeah, well, you don't even know she's married, man.
Well, let me see here. Detectives were investigating all of those questions and more on Wednesday, but appeared as lost as Ms. Chasen's friends and clients when it came to making sense of the crime. Yeah, well, you know.
Yeah, they got to see that.
Anyway, shortly after midnight on Tuesday, Ms. Chase, I have a, I'll tell you right now, they're going to solve this in 2 weeks.
Really? You think, why do you say that?
I'm just telling you, they'll have it solved in 2 weeks.
You tell me it's all open and shut and everything?
I think something this high visibility, someone is going to come forward. And they're going to give a name or a clue or something that's going to spring this thing wide open. I'm telling you, I'm giving it 2 weeks. Now, what's today? I don't know what today is. The 16th, the 17th? By the end of the month, okay?
Well, what if you're wrong?
If I'm wrong, I'm wrong, man. I'm not going to bet any money. I'm just...
Yeah, but if you're right, then you take all the glory. If you're wrong, you just say, well, it's wrong.
If I'm right, I take all the glory. All right. If I'm wrong, then... If I'm wrong, then I'll say I'm a dumbass on the hour, every hour, for one show.
What? That ain't no good.
No, man, you got to do it like twice an hour.
Yeah.
All right, twice an hour. I'll pay off the bet that way. I'll say I'm a dumbass. I was wrong about this. Now, detectives were investigating all of these questions. Although witnesses reported hearing 5 gunshots, the police on Wednesday would say only that Ms. Chasen suffered multiple gunshot wounds, pending the result of a coroner's report. Adding to the mystery, despite a shattered passenger window, there's no damage to the car that I'm aware of from the gunshots, said Sergeant Lincoln Hoshino of the Beverly Hills Police Department. The person could have been in the car, outside the car, could have walked up to the car, driven up, we don't know. So there's no gunshot damage to the car, and she was shot, I thought, I heard, in the chest. Sergeant Hoshino told investigators, she said that investigators were collecting security camera images from home and business cameras along the stretch of Sunset Boulevard Ms. Chasen had been driving on before turning onto Whittier. This is not the same Whittier Boulevard that we know of in East L.A. This is a street called Whittier in Beverly Hills. The killing, one of only 3 this year in Beverly Hills, according to the police, stunned a clubby film industry in which Ms. Chasen had been a fixture for 3 decades, getting her start as a bit player on soap operas before quickly making the transition to the dark arts of publicity and Oscar campaigning. On Wednesday, the Palm Springs International Film Festival, a client of Ms. Chasen's, offered a $100,000 reward for information leading to the arrest of her killer. And let's see, about 150 people turned out for an impromptu memorial at the Four Seasons Hotel on Tuesday night. The Oscar-winning producer Scott Rudin was helping to plan a similar gathering in New York for Wednesday night. The death of Ms. Chasen, whose hard-charging and abrupt style was softened by a petite frame, quick smile, and a perfectly blown-out blonde hairdo, hit a nerve in Hollywood in part because she was seemingly everywhere, lunching at industry watering holes where she would always pluck a tiny bottle of sweetener from her purse for the iced tea. And
that's pretty cheap.
What do you mean?
Well, pointing out that she steals the sweetener.
They didn't say she stole it, man.
It said she got it in her purse, man.
Yeah, but she probably typed it from another restaurant.
I don't know that, man. What are you going to bring that up for? Anyway.
What's with an old lady, right?
Will you shut up, man? We're talking about somebody that's gone now, okay?
Sorry.
Unmarried and without children, Ms. Chasen focused all of her attention on her clients. Just six minutes before her death, she left a voice message at her office with a to-do list for her lieutenants to tackle when they arrived at work the next morning. Mm-mm-mm. Well, much of this is very nice. It's obituary-style reporting here. But who did this? The woman is shot multiple times. The car was still moving. It ran into a light pole, from what I understand.
Yeah.
That's why they thought initially, was this a carjacking? Somebody driving alongside? Was she pulled over, but the engine was not off and her foot was on the brake, you know?
That's what I think.
And she got shot and the foot comes off the brake and the car rolls ahead. I'm telling you, 2 weeks. Something like this is either a hit, okay, or it is a person that knew her. I don't know, man. You know, I take that back. Maybe a month.
Oh, yeah, man. No, we only have a bet and everything.
No, all right. I'll stick to 2 weeks. 877-876-PHIL. Don't forget, Our producers, Jason Rance, technical director Charles Wagon, our associate producers, Dan Northcraft, later and greater, PhilHenryShow.com.
Phil Hendry.